Hey, Paulina.
Hey, Lars.
You had a party last weekend.
Yes.
How was the heads?
Ooh.
Have you fully recovered?
Yes, I have fully recovered. I mean, yes. Over 40, it takes a couple of days. Was so much fun. It was such a cool party.
Please share with our listeners who came and performed at your party. That was an insane performance. I was like,
Wasn't
what? I was like, what is going on here?
And I had no idea. It was a complete surprise. I was they had this poster pinned up at the location when we arrived that said surprise live act, and I'm like, oh, that's so cool that they made this poster that looks so nice. And because we had like an 80s party and we were all dressed up, I thought this was the surprise, you know? But no, my maid of honor had actually organized that the German champion in aerial hoop and pole dance was doing a performance. And I had no clue about it. And so this woman showed up, put up her pole.
Yeah, just in the
And
middle of everything.
just in the middle of the location and did her performance and was incredible. This is such a beautiful, beautiful sport.
It
Oh,
was
it was
insane what she's able to do. I was like, what? How can this get any more crazy? And then it got more crazy, right?
And what you missed because you left a little bit earlier, round about 2 o'clock in the morning. So she stayed for the entire rest of the party.
Really?
Yeah, I invited her. I was like, her and her boyfriend. I was like, okay, you've got to stay after performing here. And she loved it. She had so much fun. And at 2 o'clock in the morning or something like that, all the big men of the party were standing outside, and were trying to do some of her moves on one of the lantern posts outside of the location. And I saw it from the inside and I just waved her over to me and I was like, you have to see this, you have to see this. And we were standing at the window watching how those big trained dudes, they go to the gym like once every day, how they try to like get their legs up but they couldn't do it. And
And they
we
couldn't do it.
laughed so hard. It was hilarious. And then she went outside and gave them an impromptu pole dance session on a lantern post.
Oh, I should have been for that one. I would have loved to try that. Damn. But thank you for having us, even though that we left early. Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you both for driving down. It was wonderful that you guys could make it. Loved it. I
Yeah,
loved
we
having
don't get to see each other that often, so it was really nice that that we got the chance. And I promised you to come to Leipzig for like 4 years now or something like that.
You
Yeah.
did. But I mean, considering how rent seldom we get to see each other, we've seen each other now twice in person within 6 weeks. So that was
6 weeks,
pretty
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah, let's see if we can keep up that momentum. Okay, Paulina, we are ready to record today's episode. Are you ready for this?
Absolutely. Let's
Okay,
go.
let's do it. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Cultures from Hell, where we explore the messy realities behind workplace culture. Today, we are asking a question that hits close to home for anyone working in the modern office. When does accountability turn into surveillance?
Surveillance.
Surveillance. So, yeah, okay. Let's do that again. Just gonna put a pin there. Yes, thank you very much. Ooh, hello, everybody, and welcome back to Cultures from Hell. This is the podcast where we explore the messy realities behind workplace culture. Today, we are asking a question that hits close to home for anyone working in the modern office. When does accountability turn into surveillance? From time tracking software to productivity monitoring, companies claim it's all about efficiency, but at what cost to trust and dignity. Joining me today, as always, Paulina, co-founder of the Culture Code Foundation and my co-host on the show, and she is here to unpack what workplace tracking really does to morale, performance, and culture. Welcome, Paulina.
Thank you, Lars, and thank you for this tantalizing intro.
Yes, so good. Okay, Paulina, let's dive straight into it. What are some of the most common forms of surveillance you're seeing in workplaces today?
Well, to be honest, it very much depends on where I'm looking at it, because this is one of the few times where I'm really glad that Germany is lagging in technology.
What are you talking about?
Because surveillance in Germany, in the office, mostly comes down to micromanagement. Basically, your manager being the surveillance tool, looking over your shoulder.
Yeah, they're surveilling the fax machine. That's how you do it in Germany.
But in other countries, if Big Brother got a corporate upgrade, it'll look like a lot like today's office tech stack. Because there are time tracking tools that screenshot every few minutes. We have Slack bots that lock your away status. We have keystroke monitors that report on how fast you're typing, because apparently trust is measured in words per minute now. Add to that webcam-based presence detection and GPS tracking for field workers, and you've got an office that looks more like a probation shack than a workplace scenario. And again, in Germany, not so much. But I have seen bits and pieces of that, but not the full thing in any company yet.
I would also say that even though I work with tech and AI and so on a daily basis, I'm still not seeing like kind of how scary it can become from what you're describing. I had heard stories and read about stories. I think especially when we get to like bigger companies, like maybe the big tech companies, where people can and do this in quotation marks, can hide because there's so many. They might want to surveil it even more. And yeah, it's a very scary future.
Yeah, and it's also at the same time, it feels like such a huge step back. Because we all know it's proven time and time again, and I know I'm going to talk about this more, but it's proven time and time again that this is BS. It doesn't improve anything. It lowers loyalty. It lowers engagement. It lowers motivation. To all companies out there, before I get into anything else, just treat your employees like effing adults.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
And why do you think tracking has become normalized in a modern organization?
Because there's so much pressure in organizations, especially on middle management, and leaders are scared. And I also think that it's a form of going back on your own accountability, because if you have to do the monitoring or the surveillance, then you can feel guilty. But if technology does that, that is a bit more glamorous in a way. And so I would say the fear of low productivity, which, I mean, everybody's talking about companies not being productive enough, the lack of imagination, all of that feeds into the surveillance part. And I also find this rather lazy, to be honest, because instead we could be building actual accountability cultures. But no, many leaders actually reach for cheap control mechanisms instead. So I don't know if the picture is appropriate, but it's the business equivalent of installing a nanny cam instead of learning how to parent yourself.
I love that one.
And so accountability within leaders and the willingness and ability to have hard conversations is, from my perspective, and you know this, one of the most crucial leadership skills that you can have. And if you don't want to learn this because you're lazy, or because you don't want to grow yourself, or you're overwhelmed, or whatever the reason might be, then having data-driven surveillance becomes the equivalent of that, or it's not an equivalent because it's not the same, but it feels like easier to track data instead of having the hard conversations for many leaders.
Yeah, and I could see, especially leaders that might not be like willing to like confront people and have that honest conversation. We talked about radical candor in an earlier episode, right? And not everybody's comfortable with that. And then maybe it's just easier to track and then just send them a Slack report saying you're not typing fast enough or something like that.
Imagine. I think that the minute a leader would, my manager would send me a message like that, I would be like, I'm out of here.
Oh, yes. I'll just send a Slack bot message back. I'm out of here. I'll do a GIF. You know that I'm a big GIF fan.
So am I.
Oh, yes. How do companies usually justify these tools? And how does that differ from how employees experience them?
So leaders usually say this is either about efficiency or visibility or transparency or all of the above. And employees clearly just hear, we don't trust you to do your job well. And as I said before, the result, people disengage like that. They comply on the surface while quietly rebelling underneath. So a story from one of the companies that I was working with, they were in complete in-office culture before COVID, and then they moved into a hybrid culture. And some leaders actually obsessively started checking the green status on Teams, which indicates that you're online. And they would send out messages immediately if this thing turned into yellow or red, right? And what did people do? They installed mouse jiggler tools to stay online while stepping away to do other things, right? So leaders literally created the behavior that they were afraid of. The most beautiful example of self-fulfilling distrust prophecy I've ever seen.
That is, I'm sorry to say on podcast, that is so stupid. You know, I don't use Teams, I use Slack. And if I go like deep dive into something, you know, or go into a meeting, for example, I'm going to put myself as away.
Exactly.
And, you know, I might be in a meeting selling the biggest deal ever in the company history, and they're sitting there thinking, what a lazy MF, right?
Exactly. And you don't just necessarily have to be in a meeting, right? You could just be doing some deep work that you need to be focused on, and you don't want any distractions by any ping pong messages from Teams, Slack, WhatsApp, or whatever, right? Because that's what I do. For hours during the day, I turn off all notification. I put my phone into one of those Faraday cages that I have on my desk, sitting on my desk, so that I can't get any WhatsApps, any messages, no phone calls or anything. So I'm basically unreachable for multiple hours during a day. And I mean, I can do this because nobody would ever bother me. I'm self-employed, but. Even when we were still working together, and I was I was a sales team leader, head of sales, international head of sales. You guys would know in these hours, if anything urgent pops up, you have to call me on my phone. Back then, obviously, in those times, I wouldn't put my phone into this cage thing. But so you knew there was that calling me on the phone was the only way of reaching me during this time. And people don't understand how significant this constant distraction, this constant being online thing is. There are studies that show that every time that you see a notification pop up, just see it, not read the message, just see the notification. It'll take you 11 minutes to get back to the same level of focus that you were before. That is exactly the biggest efficiency killer that you can possibly have. So if you want your team to be more effective or efficient, make sure that they get distracted less. That is the easiest fix in the world.
Mm-hmm.
This is so, so easy.
And I would say back to when we work together, just give you a kind of like big shout out to both you and Eric, your co-founder for the Culture Co Foundation and the CEO of SolveMate when we worked there together. I never in all the time that I worked there had the feeling that somebody didn't trust that I was doing my job. And that was despite that numerous times, you know, I maybe went for like a walk in the middle of the day just to kind of air myself and so on. And you called me or something and you were like, hey, what are you doing? Oh, I'm just out for a walk. You know, I'm going to grab some coffee. Oh, that sounds great. You know?
Yeah.
So like nobody ever gave like the feeling that you're not doing your job. And back to your point about everything here, because I experienced great workplace culture in two jobs. One was SolveMate and one was Roger that I worked in previous to SolveMate. And for those two jobs or those two companies, I've never worked, and I'm going to again do this in quotation marks, so hard. And we're not necessarily talking about the hours. I put in the hours, so that's not going to be a topic. But I've never been so passionate about like doing my job and closing the deals and getting better deals and so on because of that.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It is such a huge lever if you trust your people. And of course, there might be people that abuse that trust, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, if you know that people, and if you're a good leader, if you're really close to your people, you will know who is delivering their job and who is not delivering on the goals, right?
So exactly.
And I also remember having a team member, multiple team members over my career, but where I just had a sense there was something off. And then you talk to the people and then you say, okay, this is not what I expect. I expect more of you. How do we get you to get there? And then you work closely together to get the person there. And if that doesn't work, then you still have to have the opportunity to let them go. But I mean, we trust a random bus driver or train driver to get us home safely. So why not trust the people that we work with really closely to do their jobs? It is, we trust complete strangers all the time, every day. And if you are, as a leader, incapable to trust your own people, then the basis for any results, the basis for any achievement within your entire team is just gone. It's just not there. So 100%. Without trust, you will never see results. Hands down. I mean, maybe in the short term, if you lead with angst and fear and whatnot. Not in the long run.
No, in the long run. Again, back to we have mentioned a particular Western country with a big bully, and we are starting to see the uprise now, right? It's coming nice and slowly. Yes. Okay, back on topic.
let's incite this meeting to rebellion.
Yes. And speaking of that, is there a cultural difference between how we in Europe or as European versus U.S. companies use monitoring technology? I would think there might be something in terms of GDPR, maybe. I don't know.
That's definitely a factor. And I think I mentioned it at the beginning where I was like, I'm glad that Germany is lagging behind. But overall speaking, I mean, obviously, I have much more expertise on the European market than the U.S. But what I'm seeing, I find quite fascinating. In the U.S., there is this underlying belief that your time is company property. Mm-hmm. And that makes it more acceptable to monitor because, hey, we're paying you. And we have very, very different labor laws in the US versus Europe, especially in Germany and France, where labor laws and cultural norms are very strong, much stronger on dignity and privacy, GDPR, for example. And we also have a much higher social system. That's also true for the US, the UK. The UK doesn't have that. So in the UK, I think if you're out sick more than 10 days within an entire year, you already see major pay cuts. And if you don't have a social system that catches people, then companies can be much more, much bolder in terms of, how do I phrase this? They can be bigger bullies because people, yeah, in Europe, and I love this about Europe, so don't get me wrong, right? In Europe, because we have those strong social systems and because we have strong labor laws, it is so much more difficult to frighten you into staying than it is in the US. Plus, in the US, you have much more people than you have in Europe. So the labor markets in Europe are running dry. So I work with a lot of companies that have to stick with people that don't really deliver because there's just nobody else. So all of that obviously strengthens the employee side of things, right? So there are huge differences just by the way the social systems run and the labor force is structured, et cetera, et cetera. And all of that above, still with remote work, even European startups are starting to sneak into more tracking, which also has partially has to do with the fact that labor laws, especially in Germany, enforce specific tracking. But we do wrap it in a friendlier UX, maybe.
Yeah, I think it's a European law that just got passed that we actually have to time track.
Yes, and it's supposed to protect employees because you're supposed to do less overtime. But
it's like I was a consultant at a company when that got like put in, right, that we have to do this. And it was just a spreadsheet like, hey, put in 8 hours every day, right, or 7 hours every day. And they actually framed it like that, you know. So they didn't actually say that put in if you work less hours or put in if you work more hours.
Yeah.
Because it just needed to look nice on paper, and there's nobody to control this.
And that's the point. That's the main issue I have with all of those tracking ideas and devices, because they are easily fooled.
Yes,
and that was already the case when you still had the punch clock. I know companies that ask their employees to punch out and then go back in. So yes. It's. For me, this is just creating unnecessary bureaucracy.
I think also, yeah. Paulina, like I've worked with both European and American companies, right? And I think also one of the differences in those two cultures is that in the US versus Denmark, it might be different in Germany, is that in the US you have this hierarchy that you have to follow at any stage, right? You can't just jump straight to the CEO and say, I have a complaint or something like that. Where in Denmark, you know, most CEOs, even in really, really big companies, they have a complete open door policy.
Yeah.
That you can just walk in and say like, hey, I know that I have 25 sub-managers before I reach you, but I don't trust anybody of them. So I want to talk to you about this X, Y, and Z, right? So I think that's also a big culture thing versus when it comes to like trusting and tracking and so on, that we have a much flatter structure.
Hmm. In Germany, I would definitely say you see both. depending on the size of the company. But I can share at this point that having an open door policy from a CEO, and I've seen this in a French-run company that I work with or work for, actually. The CEO also was like, I want everyone to be able to reach out to me, just message me, just put a blocker in my calendar. I'll have lunch with anyone. That strengthens a culture so, so much if the CEO is available, if the CEO actually listens to people far below them. Mm-hmm. So this is one of the biggest hacks for a strong culture that I've seen, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So,
as long as you mean it, as long as it's not just for show.
Of course. That goes without saying in everything we talk about, right?
Yeah, you would think.
Yeah, okay. Good point. What does surveillance do to the sense of trust between like employees on one side and management on the other side?
Let me see if I can illustrate that. No, I don't have a match on the lighter here.
And I would say this. I know that we're doing this on video, right? But not everybody looks at the video. So.
So nobody just saw me looking for a match so that I can just... well, it basically burns it to the ground, right?
Yeah.
Because trust isn't built through compliance. It's always built through psychological safety, autonomy, and accountability. And that goes both ways, right? I mean, as a leader, I should bring a certain level of base trust into my team when I start there, but I will, they will earn my deeper trust if they are accountable for what they are doing. I will earn more of their trust if I'm psychologically safe and if I give them autonomy and especially if I also hold myself accountable to the standards that I set in the team. So if I feel like I'm being watched, I'll do everything I do just to avoid trouble. And that means I won't raise issues that show up. I won't take creative risks. And I definitely won't bring my full self to work. So valence breeds fake harmony, quiet, and quiet resentment.
Yeah. And you know, very often here on the show, I kind of ask you to share a story because I would imagine that in working with this professionally, with the Culture Code Foundation, and also having a previous life as not self-employed, you have experienced more than most already in your life, even though you're only 30. 30, was it 30? Yeah, 30. Let's keep it 30.
Slightly over.
Slightly over 30. So can you share an example on how monitoring systems backfired based on your experience?
Well, that mouse mover story from before.
Right? Oh, yeah.
There was a real company, a real leadership team, a real breakdown. They wanted to keep an eye on what was really working during those remote days. And what they got instead was a wave of disengagement, a spike in passive-aggressive compliance, and a resignation from some of their best people. And one person actually who told me the story about this surveillance he said, and that's a literal quote, "If you don't trust me, why the hell am I building anything for you?"
That is a really, really good one. That's another T-shirt, Paulina. We're back to our T-shirt shop. It is actually a really, really good quote and a very strong quote, right? Why the hell? And instead of like you said, like the American way, and not to put all the Americans under the bus here, but in the American way where you say like, hey, we're paying you for the hours and the hours belong to us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then the employees should turn it around and say like, hey, I'm giving you my valuable time. I'm giving away time to spend with my girlfriend, my kids, my friends, and so on. So why should I trust you why should I build anything if you don't trust me? Because I'm giving you my valuable time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. how does constant monitoring change the way people have, or the way people behave at work, even subconsciously?
I think two things that I've seen a lot is self-censorship and performative work. So people will start optimizing for looking busy rather than being effective. So
I just want to say I've been guilty on that. Like I'm really good at looking busy, and then come from one position I had in my life. And sorry for interrupting. Back to you.
No worries. I think we've all been there, to be honest. And then you will see this classic keyboard warrior behavior, putting this in quotation marks, typing nonstop, over-responding in Slack threads, never logging off, timing messages to be sent out late at night or early in the morning to pretend you've been working those long hours. All of that just so it looks like you're engaged. And at the end of the day, it's more or less a charade. And the kicker is creativity and problem solving, two skills that we need now more than ever, because those are two of the few things that AI can't do as well as humans yet. So creativity, problem solving, super, super crucial workplace skills, and they require psychological safety and downtime. You do not get innovation, you do not get creativity, you do not get problem solving from people who are in survival mode.
Mm-hmm. And if we frame this in terms of dignity at work, what lines are being crossed here?
The line between treating people as adults. Remember my rant from the beginning of the show. Right?
Oh, yes. Who can forget?
So the line between treating people as adults versus treating them as assets or as children. Uh-huh. Dignity means I get to be trusted with my time, energy, and integrity. And surveillance says, we don't believe you're doing your job unless we watch you. And that's humiliating. It infantilizes grown professionals. And the worst part about it, it's often done in the name of empowerment or accountability. And now that I'm talking about this, do you remember this ad that I think it was Airbnb, and they had this huge poster that they pinned to the side of a New York skyscraper that read, something about, oh, I need to research it. Treat your employees as adults, not as children. Trust them to do their job. Something in the line of that. So it was brilliant. Really loved it. Maybe it was AI. Maybe it was an AI picture. Who knows? But it's really starting to get to me, right? I think I have high media competence, and yet I'm falling for AI videos, especially when it's like those cool, funny videos of cats and dogs doing insane stuff, like fighting off tigers in the backyard to protect the children, blah, blah, blah. I fall for that.
I have this one on TikTok that I follow, with two cats sitting in a podcast studio, like with the head mics on and everything. Yeah. And they're really doing like real conversations, like you're making fun of humans. Oh, do you also get your human to pet you all the time? Ah, they're laughing. It's so well done. Yeah, okay. Okay, completely off topic. Paulina, how can organizations measure performance without undermining agency?
By simply measuring outcomes, not presence. And that requires multiple things from leaders and managing teams. You need to set clear expectations. You need to set measurable goals. We've been through SMART goals before. And you have to hold yourself accountable to those standards that you set and the expectations that you're setting. And you have to hold the entire team accountable. And let's link up the book Five Dysfunctions of a Team by Patrick Lencioni, because he says it, he summarizes that so beautifully. The healthiest teams are teams that have a strong foundation of trust and that know what's expected of them and hold each other accountable. So you and I would be holding each other accountable without the pressure from our leader necessarily, because we would, yeah, just feel intrinsically motivated to make sure that we stay on track. Maybe if you need a tip, try weekly peer shared progress snapshots instead of tracking hours. Let the team define what success looks like, because the accountability grows within teams, not from management dashboards or tracking dashboards for that matter.
And what kind of workplace mindset does surveillance create over time?
'90-84 vibes. Thanks, George Orwell. Well, I would definitely say we would see a culture of second guessing, fear, and low initiative, because people will start playing defense. They stop proposing bold ideas because they fear being seen as off task or rebellious, maybe even. So I'm convinced that surveillance slowly turns workplaces into compliance factories. And the irony of that is you will get less ownership, not more. So, like, yeah, you're basically creating the problems that you're afraid of.
Is this about accountability or control?
I know you're just, I know this is a rhetoric question, Lars. Let's call it what it is. Absolutely, 100% hands down control. Again, accountability is built through shared expectations and trust. Surveillance is what you reach for when you don't know how to build either one of those.
Very good point. How does the presence of, again, in quotation marks, the digital eye affect creativity or problem solving?
I mean, we talked about creativity needing privacy and downtime and focus as well, right? So the ability to pause and wonder and fail and try again. And if I'm constant, so is the lot of the most creative people I know spend a certain amount of time doing, they just looking out the window. Like, not 20 hours, obviously, but at least 20 minutes, just staring into the abyss, just having things processed within their brains. And if I'm constantly being watched, I stick to the safe zones. I won't do that anymore. And there is the saying that most great ideas come in the shower. I don't know if that's true, if it's in the shower, but it's definitely not happening while someone is measuring your active time on Jira.
Do you think transparency, telling employees exactly what's being tracked, makes it better or worse?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say, you know me, I like the gray answers, right? I would say it depends. Because if you have transparency with choice and agency, then it's going to make it better. But if it's transparency without zero power to opt out of it, then it's just pounding a smiley on the surveillance. And I just, if you're going to be Big Brother, don't pretend to be a mentor.
I like that. Okay. So what does a healthy form of accountability look like without crossing into surveillance, mm-hmm. or is it even possible?
Well, again, it starts with clear expectation setting and clear goals. And then the accountability comes with clear outcomes that match those goals. It comes with team-driven check-ins, how far along we are, how fast we're moving, what we still need, what is missing, etc. And clearly it comes with psychological safety, because you will need the psychological safety for people to speak up if things aren't going as fast as expected, if unexpected hurdles show up, etc. So those three things are really relevant. And basically saying, set expectations, let your team know, let your people own the how to get there, how to do it, and then create space for them to learn when things go off track. And that's obviously also your job as a manager, to show up and help them learn in those moments. And if you're tempted to install a tracker, ask instead, have we made expectations clear enough for people to actually self-manage?
Very good point. I think, and again, just based on my own experience in previous jobs, not all workplaces are good enough at putting those, let's call it the SMART goals that you have mentioned many times in our episodes, that you don't have anything to be held accountable to, right? And then I think that that's when they get, in quotation marks, desperate enough to start tracking things, because they don't have it. Because for me, it's like, and we all work differently. Like, I would imagine, knowing you and knowing me, that if we get the same task, let's say 3 weeks from now, you'll get into it right away and say, like, okay, let's start planning how to do this and how to get to it. Me, the first week, I'm just going to do training and other things. And then, 2 weeks, I might have to start thinking about this. And then 1 week before we have to do it, then I'll put in the grind.
And at the end of the day, I don't care.
Exactly.
I don't care. I would care in your scenario if then after 2.5 weeks you would realize, oh my god, I'm running out of time, I can't do this, or there are some unexpected problem that I need fixing, then I will care. Then we will have to have a discussion about this, how to plan this in the future. But if you manage to do this task well within the last week and deliver on time, I don't care that you spent, I don't care. You've done it.
Exactly.
You've delivered on the outcome that we've agreed upon.
Yeah.
But that's me.
And let's talk to some of the leaders listening to the podcast out there. So how can a leader rebuild trust once it's been damaged by excessive monitoring?
The same way you can rebuild trust with everything else that has been, when in any other scenario that has hurt the trust or damaged the trust, apologize. Co-create new rules and new boundaries, and then replace or actually show up with this new behavior and be consistent with this new behavior. You cannot undo distrust, but you can use it as a catalyst to build new trust. But that will only happen if you are consistent then on the repair. Check in last week's episode about repair. So one team I work with, they scrapped their time tracking tool, then let the team redesign how they wanted to report progress together. And not only did morale go up here, but delivery speed actually improved as well. So because they finally felt trusted, treated like adults, and got the feeling that they, it was their job to hold themselves accountable.
And what role or how do you see a role for HR and ethics committees to play in setting limits on surveillance tools?
I mean, first of all, I want to say, obviously, there are situations where the law requires certain things. And in that case, is obviously there is nothing anyone can do except being really transparent about it, and that it's not, and that it's something that the law requires you to do. And generally speaking, I would say HR has a big role. They should not be the compliance police, but rather be culture architects, and that goes for any scenario. And on top of that, I think every surveillance tool should go through an ethical review, and it should be very, very clear that not every leader has just free rein on what to implement and what to control, but it should actually be an HQ decision, and that needs to be reviewed in terms of, is the tool or is the surveillance thing proportional? Is it transparent? And does it reduce or increase human agency? If the answer is no on either one of those three, ditch it.
And if you could, like, again, based on like your experience and the work with the Culture Code Foundation, if you could design a policy from scratch, what principle would you include to ensure fairness and dignity?
Definitely outcome-based measurement by setting smart goals. Often transparency, regular review of tools with employee voice, super, super important. And definitely, absolutely no surveillance during breaks or private time. And I think so. My baseline would be, if you personally as a leader wouldn't want that tool used on you, don't roll it out to your team.
And that goes for everything in life.
yeah, basically.
If you don't want to use it on yourself, then please do not.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to be don't treat people differently than you want to be treated by people.
Exactly.
That's super simple rule of thumb, I would say.
And what does
a decent human being?
What does this say about our evolving relationship with work and technology? All of this we have talked about.
I would say we've become addicted to control in the name of productivity, and it is costing us humanity at work. We are trying to automate trust. And unfortunately, I can tell you that right now, that won't work.
Are we at risk of confusing trust with control?
Mm. Hands down, yes, we are already doing that. We are already confusing them. You can test it yourself. If your trust systems are invisible, but your control systems are obvious, then you're definitely confusing those and your culture is out of balance.
I like that analogy, like it has to. Okay. So, and if you had to predict what will workplace surveillance look like in 10 years, how would that look like? And we are in the middle of like an AI era, right?
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to hearing this answer here.
Oh, this is not a good ending to the podcast, though, because it's going to be a little bit dystopian. I don't like to be dystopian. But if we don't course correct, I can see us clocking in with a retina scan, analyzing moods by webcam, and scoring productivity like a video game. So I think there are no limits necessarily if we don't course correct, and that doesn't just go for how we approach work. Honestly, and I'm going to get political once more, it also has to do if we don't course correct in how we view other humans and how we treat human beings in the overall scheme of things. Because we are not freaking machines. We're humans. We need connection. We need exchange. We need to be real, to be able to bring our uniqueness, to feel seen, to feel heard, to feel alive, basically. And we are pretending that if we're just getting more and more machine-like, then the world's going to be better. The hell it will. And that's why I'm so passionate about my job, because that's what I'm trying to work for in workplaces. That we really get brave on this side, that we really adopt a positive worldview, that we adopt a positive view of the humans that we're working with, and where trust can be a new KPI, a world where culture will be designed to help people thrive. And I very, very strongly believe that if people thrive, businesses thrive. And what we're currently doing is, if we go down that other road, we will make people ill. We will make people depressed. We will make people check out, and we will destroy our own wealth. Because people will not help your company thrive, because they are just trying to survive. And whatever tries to survive won't thrive. It's it's so easy, right? It's so obvious. If you really think about it, it's so, so obvious. If a plant is struggling to get enough water, it will not blossom. It will not produce pollens that then create new life. And it's the exact same thing with us humans, and in work life as well. If we are feeling policed, if we're feeling controlled, if we're feeling micromanaged, if we're feeling like we can barely show up as our own selves, we will not make any success. We will not create successful businesses, economies, and societies based on that. If we're just focused on hatred and focused on negativity and fear mongering. Sorry.
You went on another rant. Yeah. Okay, Paulina, we are running really fast out of time here. So just before we go, what's one thing you hope leaders remember from this conversation?
That surveillance only gives you data. Trust actually gives you performance. And if you want people to thrive, start designing for dignity, not for control.
And that's a good way to end today's podcast. Please tell our listeners where they can follow your work and learn more about the Culture Code Foundation.
You can find us at culturecodefoundation.com, and you can find both me personally and the Culture Code Foundation on LinkedIn, where you can also follow our series. Lars and I will always be happy if you just DM us about any story that you would like to share on this podcast. We love to tell real-life stories, not just from my own work experience, but from your personal experiences. Actually, next week, we're going to have a live guest on the show, which I'm super excited for. And as usual, we will put all the social media handles in the show notes. And I will also link up the book that I've mentioned.
Yes. And please go in and give us a follow on, I think we are on all podcast platforms and on YouTube as well. So go in, give us a follow, DM us, write a comment, whatever, and we will get back to you as soon as we can. Thank you, everybody, for listening in to Cultures of Hell from Hell. God, so awful. Damn.
Culture's
okay. Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Cultures from Hell. We will talk or see each other next week.
Exactly. Thank you, Lars, and thank you to our listeners.